Steve Robertson here on Phoenix FM, and it gives me great pleasure to be joined on the phone by Imogen Heap. Hello, Imogen.
Hello again. How are you?
Yeah, fine, thank you. And yourself?
Yes, I'm good. I'm very good. I'm sorry I can't be there with you today to celebrate. Very much congratulations to you.
Oh, thank you so much. And I mean, you joined us at Bedford Park in 2011, at Bedford's Park in 2011, when you were part of our creative sessions when we took that out on the road. And here we are now out on the road doing outside broadcasts from just off the A12 as well.
Yeah, no, that was a fun little session. I think I go into that cafe often because I don't live too far. And nice bird watching space there. I think the cafe's starting to shape itself up now, so they might actually have some food that you can eat there rather than just some plastic cups of coffee. No, it's quite exciting, actually. So it's such a beautiful venue, such a beautiful space. I love that park.
And it's lovely to have that just down the road then as well.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, well, look, I mean, it was great joining us there. And, I mean, it was such a sort of intimate gig as well. It was great to be able to see you do your own thing. And because you're on your own, you do all the music yourself, does this mean that you can pick and choose quite a bit of the work that you've then gone down? Because the big thing that you're known for more recently is doing the music for the Harry Potter stage show, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. That was a bit of a curveball. I have done one tiny thing for theatre before. It was with a friend of mine who became a friend called Stephen Hoggett, and he was doing this very kind of slightly odd play, perhaps, which I really loved, a physical theatre piece, very little spoken word in it, and they were dancing to moving to all the beats from Haydn for Speak for Yourself, and so I reappropriated a lot of that album to fit with this theatre piece that they did back then. And the same guy brought me into this Harry Potter because he's the movement director of the Cursed Child play, and obviously he didn't make that decision on his own.
Yes.
But I think that was my in, and he's very good friends with John Tiffany, who's the director, and I think they've kind of grown up over the years listening to my music. And so that's, yeah. And then obviously convincing JK. I know that she wanted a British composer. And so I was in there, I think. And thankfully I met them and they seemed to like me. And then they let me in. And then it was about six months, yeah, on and off, working quite intensively in the theatre space, sitting in a theatre chair for about 2 months with my headphones on, very little interaction with the actual cast or crew or the creative team, because there was a lot of music to make.
And when you're doing that then, do you feel very under pressure, because it's the closest thing perhaps you're doing to, for want of a better word, a proper job?
Yeah, well, everyone's under pressure. Everyone is. It's in a way it's kind of different for me to have lots of people around me also feeling that pressure. Usually I'm not always the one just either putting pressure on myself, or I have a tour coming up, I've got a release coming up, and so it's nice to experience that with everyone. And there's something really quite freeing in a way about not having oodles of time to kind of faff around and just go with your gut and your instinct and hopefully come up with stuff that really works. And it really is an amazing experience to sit in the theatre, when the lighting crew are trying new lighting and the stage design people have just put on a new bit of set, and the actors are trying out new bits of text, and the director's flying around putting it all together, and the special effects guy and the sound effects, and then me doing my bit. And then it's this really cool feeling when you just see something work for the first time, and you get this instant kind of feedback that is from all the creative team and everyone in the room. Either they don't give you any feedback, which means that was great, carry on, or they kind of walk up to where I'm standing and go, we're not quite, whatever it might be. And usually I know it, there's a feeling that you just feel like, yep, that didn't work, or yes, that was really good, and you just hope nobody disagrees with you. But no, it was an amazing experience, and I... I still can't really believe it happened, and I still, every time I walk past a theatre, I have to kind of pinch myself, because it's such an incredible thing to be a part of. And to know, I mean, we don't know for sure, but I can't imagine it's going to stop anytime soon.
No.
And you know, who knows where it's going to go to in the world. So it's pretty exciting.
And anything associated with Harry Potter, I mean, it almost, you know, we're not overstating it by saying it's the biggest thing in the world. You know, the amount of records that have been broken off the back of Harry Potter. And does it mean that you managed to go to the first night and, you know, really feel involved from day one once it started the run?
I had to be there. I was there. No, I didn't have to be there on the first night. No, I didn't have to be there. But we had about a month of pre-production, not before the press night. They had this other section of time where
So what I think of as dress rehearsals and leading up to...
Yeah, it's kind of dress rehearsals, but it's open to the public. But it's before the press night. So I was in there still, you know, every day, just kind of tweaking and bits and bobs. But then when the final, you know, press night, that's absolutely, you know, you can't go in there and change anymore then. But actually we felt, I think everyone felt we were feeling pretty good about a week up to that. So everyone was, feeling pretty relaxed, that we'd done the work. And so I really enjoyed the opening night. And just sat in there watching it. My whole time I was there, I was kind of about 20 rows back, because we all had our, you know, different stations. There was like sound design station, music station, lighting station, production station. And I pretty much sat there the whole time, and I hardly ever moved. So for the premiere, it was nice to be able to just sit in the audience.
Fantastic.
And be there. It really is really magical. I hope anyone who listens, who wants to go, gets to go, because it is really something magical.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I must go, and there's always going to be a fair waiting list, but ultimately, if it keeps running, it'll certainly be packed houses for quite a while to come, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, this is something, because you've won a Grammy Award before, and I mean, this is something that's still leading to you getting plaudits elsewhere, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it hadn't been on my radar at all. I wasn't thinking about, you know, I don't really, theatre world is something that I've only just kind of been plunged into. And I did get lots of tweets the other day saying, congratulations on your nomination. So I have been nominated for an Olivier as of about 3 days ago for an outstanding achievement in music. So there's me and three others up for the nominations, and it's just, I mean, I just I'm kind of dumbfounded by it all, really. I just not something I never thought I would even imagine getting even nominated for, and it's really quite incredible.
When do find out if you've won? Well, when do you find out who the winner is?
We'll find out on the 9th.
Ah,
on the 9th of April. Yeah,
fantastic.
A big award ceremony at the Royal Albert Hall.
Have you already got your best setup ready in terms of what you're going to be wearing? And
I don't know. I'm probably panicking up to the last minute.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, look, we know that you've got to keep things fairly short anyway. You're on a busy schedule, and I mean, there's so much that you're doing at the moment. Where to now? Because I can imagine, you know, in terms of the amount of time that's been taken up with the Harry Potter music, and then what you're leading to from now. You've still got a fair sense of direction in terms of what you're doing and where you're going to be going from your music in the next few years as well, have you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I had a baby girl 2 and a bit years ago, and massively everything changed, like, of course, it does for everyone. But for me, it impacted in the way that I couldn't make music in the same way, because I didn't have, you know, a kind of support group around me or a nanny or anything like that. And so, I mean, I did eventually have some help, kind of realised that actually I need to have help if I'm going to be able to work. And so I have written maybe 3 or 4 songs since then. But while I was basically breastfeeding for hours and hours on end through the middle of the night, I just started to dream up when I'd finally get around to releasing new music, how I would rather release it. Because at the moment, you know, it's really complicated to register your music. You don't really have any idea of what it gets up to once you put it out. Like, I wouldn't know, for instance, you know, Phoenix FM were playing a song of mine. Yeah. I might start to see, I don't know if you do Twitter, you know.
Little, we do, yes. Yeah, we actually tweet what we're playing as well. Okay. So, yes, yeah.
So that, but that's a relatively recent thing. And, you know, I haven't got a bot set up to let me know when Phoenix FM play a song of mine. But ultimately, I would love to have, as a musician, as a kind of the mother of my children of songs, I'd love to be able to know what they get up to. Like, where do they, who enjoys them? What do they, if somebody wants to put a dance piece to them, or if somebody wants to put a cat video to them, or whatever they want to do with them, I want to be able to help people to engage with them and not feel guilty that they're not doing the right thing, or that they don't want to tell me, or they wish they could get a hold of me, but they don't know how to get a hold of me. I just feel like the music industry in general just needs to kind of tidy up its act. It needs to get a database, a database of songs, a database of rights, a database of artists, of creatives, so that people can enable us to be better business people, because our data will be in order. But until this time, there hasn't really been the impetus in the music industry at large to make that happen. But I think in regards to the giant of YouTube, you know, basically kind of ruling the roost for the music industry in many ways, that it's time now to make it possible, yes, and super easy for people to pay or acknowledge the work that they're using.
Yeah.
To keep
music and the creativity of music and everything going as well, isn't it? Because it's almost become, in some instances, a disposable medium or a utility. You know, people expect music to be there all the time. They're just used to that way of life now.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, we evolve, you know, technology evolves, and we live in very different ways than we did back then, or however long ago. And soon we're going to be experiencing, you know, a whole different type of kind of musical experience with VR, because VR is going to be the next wave of technology, VR and AR. You know, when we talk on our phones, or we're getting our shopping, or we're watching a film, or we're talking to somebody on, you know, whatever equivalent of Skype is in 5 years' time, going to the cinema with somebody in Japan, but together in a room, kind of, you know, it's just, it's mad. But every time you do something like that, or a game, obviously, the gaming industry is going to be first, probably, they're going to want music. And so we need to figure out, how can we make it as simple as possible for people to license music from us? Yeah. Otherwise, it's just going to be another complete mess, which it is at the moment.
Oh.
Sometimes music can take, you know, money can take up to 5 years to come back to you, if at all.
Yes.
And there's so many people in kind of in between the process of that happening as well.
Well, look,
so, yeah.
It's a good way to wind it up, actually, because there's so much that we can talk about in the future as well. And I mean, I know you're busy. Thank you so much for taking time out to talking
My
to
pleasure.
Us as well. And we'll have to update with what's going on. And we'll always let you know when we're playing our stuff as well.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'd love to actually just mention there is, I had a song recently. If anyone listening has got a child, kind of under the age of two, I've written a song called The Happy Song. And I made it with a bunch of scientists and my little Girl Scout. And it is scientifically proven to make your baby happier. I had a really good time doing it. And, you know, I had lots of iterations and groups working with scientists and babies to figure out what would make them happiest. So it's a fun song with loads of transport, because when I was making Harry Potter music, I was staying next to the British Transport Museum. So Scout, you know, my little girl decided that transport was the best thing ever, so it's got loads of transport sounds in it, and the odd lion and monkey sound. And then the other thing, which is coming out soon, which is going to be at the Tribeca Film Festival, you're going to hear it for the first time. It's a piece of music called Magic Me, and it should be out toward the end of April. So if you want to play that for the first time, then, you know, home girl, and you can play it on Phoenix FM. It's pretty good. It's called Magic Me. Yeah,
we will do. Thank you so much for talking to us, Imogen. And we'll speak to you soon, no doubt.
Yeah, all right. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye, Steve. Bye.